This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. The Sci-Fi Book Club has been going places this month, from a world where the dead persist as ghostly shimmers to a future where salesmen aggressively push you to upgrade your home. And as we continue to read the collection New Sun, Speculative Fiction by People of Color, edited by Nisi Shawl, we continue by asking questions like, what makes us human? And how should we treat new life we encounter? Sci-fi producer Christy Taylor has more on this week's story assignment.
In the story, The Shadow We Cast Through Time, Indian writer Indra Das asks us to imagine a human colony on another planet. The wormhole that took them here has collapsed, and so this group of humans is now alone on a new world. But they're not exactly alone. Another life form is there too, a fungi-like organism that infects other life, including humans, who become these very different-looking creatures that in this story we call demons. This story is also a story about accepting death. The main character, Surya, is on her way to the home of these so-called demons to turn herself over to them, as all human elders do when they feel it is their time. But as she does, she learns that the true future of her species may be to combine or hybridize with these demons. Here to talk more about this story with me is Aisha Matthews, managing editor of the Journal of Science Fiction and director of literary programming for the Museum of Science Fiction's Escape Velocity Conference. Hey, Aisha, it's been a minute.
Hi, Christy. Good to be back.
So, Aisha, we have a story here about encountering aliens, humans establishing outposts in space, and what it means to adapt to loss. What do you make of this story? What did you like?
So as a Butler scholar, I immediately kind of picked up on the Butlerian influences.
Octavia Butler.
Yes. Yeah. Particularly reminiscent of the Owen Colley in her Xenogenesis series. For me, at least personally, I really was interested in the look at symbiosis and hybridity, which I think are some of Octavia Butler's most interesting and kind of compelling tropes that she introduces in her work. And I think this story also, in many other ways of interest, kind of aligns with the stories we've discussed so far in terms of there's kind of that element of the ghost story memory of the cultural past and the legacy of the past. And so all of those things, I think, are kind of coalescing for me in this story in a less conventional cultural futurism, one that I'm very excited to talk a little further about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just as sort of a, like going back into how it feels like the other stories, it's also just kind of creepy. Like, I really love the imagery. It's very dark. There's a lot of space and symbolism about outer space. And a lot of, you know, we get to these very kind of eldritch fungal structures too. Like, it's another story that feels really perfect for Halloween season / spooky season.
Definitely.
So I wanted to bring in author Indra Das, who is the author of this story. He is the author of many short stories, as well as the book The Devourers, which is about werewolves in India. And he joins us from Kolkata. Welcome, Indra.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. And Indra, the first question I have for you, just as the author of this story that we're talking about, is what inspired it? Where did it come from for you?
There's a very specific place it came from, and that's a drawing that I did quite a while before I wrote this story. It was just a portrait of an androgynous figure with kind of these dark obsidian horns or antlers growing out of their head. So I just kind of, for whatever reason, I remembered that image that I had drawn, and I kind of started with that. I usually do that. I don't plan my stories very much. It usually starts from a particular idea or image, and then I just kind of explore once I can create a scene. So I wrote about an observer watching a figure like the one that I'd drawn, and eventually it kind of expanded, and I came to discover what this figure was, and, you know, and the world grew from there.
And that figure was the demon that we're trying to picture, that we're supposed to sort of picture when we see this alien, quote-unquote.
Yeah. At first, I was thinking of the demon as a specific figure that didn't come from hybridization, that it was just going to be a humanoid species with horns. Mm-hmm. And so it might have been a fantasy even, but then I found this more interesting to kind of have them be these revenants almost.
One of the things I really love about this story is that we see the colonists, the humans, adapting to the alien, to the other. In some stories we have about humans colonizing other planets, there's often this point in the story where there's mass violence or the threat of mass violence, a you versus me situation. And this one, it's like the humans encountered this alien species and pretty much immediately said, okay, we're just going to live with this being part of the planet we're on. And they've incorporated the alien into their culture in a lot of ways, as opposed to trying to impose. Was that a deliberate choice you were making, Indra, in flipping the script again?
Absolutely. Yeah, it was definitely a deliberate choice because the story is very much a response to the idea of space colonization, which is, of course, inherently weighed down by the real world notion of colonialism, which has done absolutely nothing good for the world. So a lot of first contact stories are from that viewpoint of trying to kind of conflict, of settling somewhere and dominating the land. And I very specifically wanted the story not to be like that, even though the alien life form is dangerous and it can kill humans. But, you know, that's the same as so many life forms on our planet. I mean, so I wanted to explore what it might be like to be a human settlement that isn't acting in a colonial fashion and is trying to live in similar ways to indigenous tribes, you know, trying to live with an ecosystem and in balance with it, even though it's enormously difficult because they're outsiders, they don't belong in this ecosystem. But because of fantasy and science fiction, we can make them belong in a different way, whereas the ecosystem absorbs them.
One thing I found really interesting in that vein, one of the few kind of directly colonial ideas that I saw was kind of at the very beginning talking about the history of how the demons came to be. And I think the quote is, "This child knew no fear, so they ventured out into this strange city, drunk on freedom, on finding their own world to name and gift with the blessing of human witness." And so to me, it reminded me of kind of the Christian Genesis story in many ways, but tied to the later idea that many other planets might consider this place a hellscape because it has these demons. So it almost seems like the Western hubris of the idea of going out and naming and conquering is what created this demon race, or helped them manifest physically in the world anyway. You know, they're portrayed as the foil, as evil. Mm-hmm. And yet, at the same time, these humans are interested in continuing to live with them. So I think that's like an interesting unresolved tension there.
I want to just jump in before you answer that, because I also really love that opening story. And there was another line in there that sort of plays to that, which is, you cannot be good in a world that has seen no evil. And there is this back and forth about morality and what it means to be good and human, or deserving of personhood, I guess.
Yeah, it's a theme I'm very interested in, how humans formulate morality in relation to their animal existence and the fact that violence is a part of nature, but how human beings create good and evil by doing things that no other animals do, and also being aware of what they're doing in a way that no other animal, as far as we know, is aware of. And the fact that we're capable of such atrocity, but also so concerned with whether or not we are good. I think that's one of the essential reasons that we even have storytelling. You know, it's to constantly try and reckon with what we are and, you know, how we differ from other animals. These demons are really representations of that kind of fear of our own violence, of our own mortality. So yeah, very, very much a theme that I love exploring.
To your point about the kind of technology and rejecting the more violent means of extracting resources and participating in life kind of brought me back to the techno-spiritualist theme of a lot of these stories in New Suns. And it was interesting to me, like clearly these humans used to procreate through gestation pods, through some kind of artificial insemination or artificial, you know, ex vivo womb. so to speak. And then they have these machines that can print meat. But then at the same time, you know, the ship is considered their dragon spirit. So I wondered kind of to what extent the tension between these highly advanced technologies that we obviously don't have and these human cosmologies of older imaginings of things like having a, you know, a clan spirit and things like that, how that tension is meant to resolve with this environmental concern.
Yeah, I love folklore and mythology in all its forms. So I love imagining how advanced societies, what their mythology would look like. And particularly in this story, as you mentioned, the folklore kind of harkens back to something older. And I felt that was appropriate because this is a small settlement in an incredibly dangerous wilderness. So it reminded me of exploring the wild when you have nothing, even though they do have very advanced technologies. They're encroached on all sides by life that they don't truly understand and that can kill them very easily. So I assumed that that would make them revert to this kind of folkloric mythology. And I think mythology is something we will always be drawn back to when, I mean, we're at a very kind of strange, advanced, but deeply kind of broken stage in human history where we have a lot of advanced technology, but we simply do not seem to have the means to fix what we've done to our planet and to deal with it. But to come back to mythology, I mean, you know, even in every time, we will always come back to folklore and mythology, even on this kind of hyper-capitalized framework of pop culture, global pop culture. You know, we have superhero movies, they're a modern mythology. We have, you were talking about the dragon spirit. We have people constantly trying to kind of create an analog to that kind of thing where they will say they have a Patronus or they will use the racist spirit animal thing. And regardless, the fact is that we are always drawn to mythology because it is the original fantastical fiction.
Just a reminder that this is Science Friday, and I'm Christy Taylor, talking to author Indra Das and Journal of Science Fiction managing editor Aisha Matthews about encountering aliens on another world. Harking back to how, you know, pop culture is modern mythology, which I really love that phrasing. If mythology is something that we learn and take lessons from, are there things you hope people especially hearken on to in reading your particular work, Indra?
I mean, I wouldn't want to be too prescriptive when it comes to the way people read my work. I mean, obviously, I would hope that they wouldn't come away with hatred. That's the main thing, you know, like that is the essential thing. I mean, I hope people see the stories as a means to think about mortality and the way people relate to each other and the way humanity exists in its own context and the way we should be emphasizing how we can, as you mentioned, Aisha, change is a massive, massive part of all my stories. And that, I think that is essentially what I want people to come away with, that we have to change, that we absolutely have to break our systems down and rebuild them if we are to get anywhere, if we're to survive ourselves.
I think I have one last question, which has nothing to do with any of this, but is just the aliens that we're dealing with here are a colonial life form. They are fungus-like. I personally love fungal life forms as a sort of feature of science fiction. What drove you to pick fungus as, you know, the kingdom from which, you know, this alien life form sprang?
I'm not sure when it took that direction. I don't think it was very conscious, but I have always been aware of the cordyceps fungus, which kind of takes over life forms and they grow these antlers. So that was definitely an influence in terms of the aesthetics of this life form. And then the exomycelial filaments and fibers, that was just came to me when I was thinking about these structures, and it felt like a cool way to bring in this hag hair element of this structure that is part of their folklore now. So it was just a cool visual. And then spores are, of course, very convenient as a science fictional storytelling device, because that way you can reach across distances and have life forms affect other life forms. But yeah, fungi are very cool, and you know, and they're also kind of thematically appropriate for the story, because they thrive on death and decay, and you know, it is a story about death.
One last thing I wanted to say, I feel like I would be remiss not to mention the beauty of your prose. There were so many times where I was like,
I
want this like embroidered on a throw pillow in my living room, the way you talk about the universe and the darkness of the universe. And it seemed there's a beauty to it that is often, I think, our human fear of death and of the unknown and the vastness of space is what we're used to hearing in the language. So even in the midst of these terrifying things, to hear it described so beautifully and as a clear part of the human continuum kind of puts humanity into a much larger spectrum of existence in a way that I think a lot of science fictions try to do, but to varying levels of success. So I really enjoyed the story.
Thank you.
Seconded.
Thanks.
Well, I think on that note, we are out of time. Thank you both. Aisha Matthews is managing editor of the Journal of Science Fiction and director of literary programming for the Museum of Science Fiction's Escape Velocity Conference. And Indra Das is a speculative fiction author of many short stories and the novel The Devourers. Thank you.
Thanks, Christy.
Thank you again for having me. It was lovely to chat.
You can go to our website to read an excerpt of The Shadow We Cast Through Time, as well as access our online community, weekly discussion questions, and our newsletter. And join us on Monday for a Zoom for a live conversation with New Suns editor Niecy Shaul. We're going to talk about what science fiction has to do with now and dig deeper into some of the questions you may have had while reading. All that information is on our website, sciencefriday.com/bookclub. For Science Friday, I'm Christy Taylor.
Thanks, Christy. Oh, and don't forget that live Zoom taping with New Suns editor Niecy Shaul. That's this Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Go to our website, sciencefriday.com/bookclub, for more information.